Good morning. Welcome to Mountain Money. We have a 70% chance of snow, which looks like it's changed to 100% here at the 7,000-foot level at the KPCW studio.
Right on cue, Larry. Right on time for Mountain Money to start.
Excellent. And this is Larry Warren along with Doug Wells. And we will get to the show in just a moment. First, let me tell you, yes, high might be 42, so it could be rain-snow mix, but right now it is falling as snow. And then we have a good chance of snow all the way through Wednesday night, but then it's going to warm up again, and the dreaded rain line will be lower than we want it.
Well, hopefully it'll be mostly snow and very little rain. Larry, this morning our first guest is going to be Angie Morgan. She and two other co-authors, all military people, have written a book on leadership. It's called Spark, How to Lead Yourself and Others to Greater Success. Angie has her MBA. She did ROTC and went on and served the country in the Marines. And they've got a bunch of advice, really culminating from their experience as officers in the military. So we have a lot of leadership folks on, very few with military experience.
You know, and one thing the military is great at doing is training leaders. So it'll be interesting to hear the military take on leadership training. And then you'll want to listen to the second half of the show as well, because we have kind of a legend in the outdoor world, Rick Ridgway. He's vice president for engagement for Patagonia, the clothing manufacturer, and he's a legendary climber, adventurer, filmmaker, author, writer. He's climbed new routes on six continents, the first American team to climb K2. We'll be talking to Rick about Patagonia's call to move the huge outdoor retailers show out of Utah because of Utah's apparent hostility toward public land ownership.
We have to talk to him about the new flagship store on Main Street.
Last talk to him about opened. Yeah, and just the whole philosophy of Patagonia, which is to leave a light footprint and be very conscious of how they manufacture and what they manufacture.
It's going to be a great show, and we're going to get started in just a moment. But first, some words from our underwriters. You're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW, and we'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
This is Mark with ESCO Heating, Air, Plumbing, and Electrical, and we are proud to sponsor the Marketplace Morning Report on KPCW. ESCO offers heating, air conditioning, plumbing, and electrical, service, repair, or replacement. ESCOUtah.com, 855-ESCO-NOW. That's ESCO, ESCO.
Morning Edition and Morning News with Leslie Thatcher is brought to you in part by Park City Hospital, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Deer Valley Resort, the Promontory Foundation, and All Seasons Resort Lodging.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. On the phone with us now is Angie Morgan. She is the co-author of the book Spark, How to Lead Yourself and Others to Great Success or Greater Success. Angie, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
We are doing well. We've got some fresh snow falling, and in Michigan, that may not be really welcome, but in a ski town like Park City, we're happy to see it.
Well, we liken ourselves as a ski town, but I don't know if you would think the same if you were to come to northern Michigan and see our hills.
So, Angie, you wrote this book with two of your partners at your firm. You're all military folks. Tell us why you think that the military take on leadership is something that maybe was not being talked about enough in the business world.
No, thank you for that question. Well, my business partner and I, Courtney Lynch, we created our firm LeadStar about 13 years ago, and we both served together in the Marine Corps, and we included Sean Lynch, who served in the Air Force, to, you know, to co-author and collaborate on this book. And it was really because of our transition from the military to the private sector, where we started to realize the subtle and some obvious differences between how leadership was used and described in our military backgrounds and in the private sector. In the military, leadership is often referred to as a behavior. What was surprising to us when we, you know, again made that leap was how leadership was often referred to as positional authority, like the leadership team or the organizational leader. Whereas in the military, everybody had a leadership role to play. And so, again, as we define leadership, we think about it as an individual's ability to influence outcomes and inspire others. So by definition, anyone can lead. It's just recognizing the behaviors commensurate with leadership, which is what we aim to do with Spark.
You know, I really enjoyed the foreword of your book. You got Fred Smith, the founder and CEO of FedEx, to do the open. I didn't realize that he was ex-military. He, like yourself, was in the Marines. He served two tours in Vietnam. And one of the things he talks about, a challenge in the corporate world, is a lot of folks are just getting by as opposed to giving 110%.
Mm-hmm.
How do you help organizations? I mean, FedEx is a huge organization. What advice do you have for folks that are looking to inspire their teams to give more than just enough, but give their best?
When I was talking with Rep. Smith about his experiences, you know, to help create the foreword that he so graciously and wonderfully put forth, what I loved hearing him talk about was that every individual in any organization has discretionary effort. The effort they could give if they were truly motivated and truly inspired to give it. And that discretionary effort, depending on the size of business, could be hundreds, if not thousands or millions of dollars, or, you know, stronger results or new innovations or cost savings, you know, or greater efficiencies, what have you. And I think about that often through the consulting work that I do, is that, you know, my firm, we work primarily with small to mid-sized businesses, and we meet a lot of professionals who have more to give, and they often cite, you know, the organization structure that doesn't, you know, really contribute to collaboration, or their manager who just doesn't motivate and inspire them. And you know, of course, those are all excuses. And in the military, we learn that excuses aren't helpful. But I've really come to appreciate that, you know, there are simple things, you know, those who are managers or those working in an organization can do to inspire and get the most out of people. And it's not often taught in business schools. I got, you know, my MBA from a wonderful business school, but we didn't talk about the same concepts I learned in the military, which really help a manager or a team member, for that matter, connect to what motivates and inspires individuals.
Yeah, and that goes to the leaders you write about in the book. You call them sparks, and one thing you say is sparks choose to lead. They don't wait for the organizational structure of the company to promote them into a position of leadership. They have to choose to lead themselves at any level, even if there's nobody following them, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And often you hear from professionals, well, I'm not going to do that because it's not my job, or we tried that once, I'm not going to try it again. And that mindset at times can breed complacency. And so what we're helping professionals realize is that, again, leadership isn't a title, it's a behavior. And if you know that, you know that no one is anointed a leader. You make yourself a leader. It's, you know, a development process. And if you can learn the behaviors, you can demonstrate and apply them. So with Spark, we give a lot of anecdotes. And, you know, from our backgrounds and, of course, from our client backgrounds as well, just to help professionals really start to come to terms with what leadership is and what it looks like and how they themselves can develop.
Why don't you tell the story of one or two of these sparks?
Yes, right. Great. We're really happy to. You know, I can think of one of the really great opportunities with our work was we got to work inside of Facebook pre-IPO, and it was just an interesting company as it was, again, really small offices scattered around the globe. And I can think of one individual in particular. She just had a knack for building connection within her team and giving them, you know, the vision for why they were working so hard and making sure that while they were working so hard that their individual needs are met. And she went just above and beyond to take care of her team. And we would call that in Spark service-based leadership. I mean, she really was there to serve her team. Mind you, she was exhausted. She was, you know, overwhelmed as well. But she really put her team as a priority, and that made just the difference for how her team worked together. So that would be one simple person, too. And in one simple example, too, I'm trying to think of others as well, you know, more personally, just from my development experience growing up in the Marine Corps, initiative was something I guess I really didn't give a lot of thought or credence to until joining the Marine Corps, but in the military, initiative is everything. And just really understanding how you can play, even in an ambiguous environment, a role in creating, you know, drive when perhaps there's no organizational clarity. Well, initiative is another one of those great spark behaviors.
You know, it all starts with the leader, as you point out in your book. And the leader to begin with has to have credibility. And you talk about a couple of the steps that it takes to build credibility. And one is accountability. You know, you're leading a team. Sometimes your team succeeds. Sometimes your team doesn't succeed. But the importance of taking accountability in your role in if the group doesn't meet its goals. Talk to us about why that's so hard and how leaders can get more comfortable when things don't go well.
Yeah, I'd like to think about accountability in a few ways. First, you know, there's personal accountability, like recognizing one of these great sayings I picked up in the Marine Corps is you are responsible for all your team does and all your team fails to do. And that's great when things are going really well because you get to take part in the pride of accomplishment. But when things aren't going well, it's first looking at yourself thinking, what am I not doing here? And being comfortable with saying, you know what, I could be wrong. I might be making a mistake. And that's actually anti-human nature. I mean, we're born, you know, trying to, you know, keep ourselves out of harm's way. I mean, you can admit failures and mistakes. You're actually putting yourself out there for judgment and criticism. But it's one of those counterintuitive qualities, accountability. When you're open and vulnerable and humble enough to admit you're wrong, people are moved and inspired by that.
Yeah,
and
you know, it's one thing to admit when you failed to meet your goals. It's another thing to be candid about your personal shortcomings. And your co-author, Courtney, has a story. She did ROTC. I don't know if you did ROTC through college as well. But just the difference when she finished ROTC and then went to the leadership class at the Marines, the first review in that program was just a scathing review by her peers, basically saying, you know, she wasn't enough of a team player. A couple of the words used were, you know, she was selfish. And that's really, that. I mean, that's getting, by definition, personal.
That's for anyone who's ever had a 360 review, despite the, you know, 80 good things that the people say about you. It's those, you know, five or six that were really critical that can stick out and haunt you for the rest of your life, and you tend to hone in on it. And, you know, like Courtney, growing up in that environment, it was really tough to get an honest assessment for how you were showing up. And it is very easy to take it personally. Yet, I think I can speak for her, and I can definitely speak for myself, the growth you get. I don't think most professionals they just don't get enough feedback for how they're showing up. And so they don't get accountability when they're doing things right. They don't get accountability, most importantly, when they're doing things wrong. And so their work existence is without feedback, and it harms them. They miss out on opportunities to really grow and develop. So Courtney and I, we're both really fortunate that the Marine Corps had, you know, no excuses, pro-accountability environment. We benefited tremendously from it. And we're really trying to bring that environment to the client engagements that we work with right now is, you know, feedback drives results. People need to know where they stand. Of course, they don't need to hear it. Perhaps like we heard it in the Marine Corps, there's other tactful ways to deliver that feedback.
You know, your service branch, you've written in the book that there's no other branch of the military and maybe not any other company where such a high percentage of the members tattoo themselves with the logo of their company, which is the Marine Corps in this case. And I'm wondering why you chose, what your personal story is. Why did you choose to go into the Marines? It's always prided itself as being the roughest, toughest, orneriest branch of the military that you don't want to mess with.
Well, if you could see me, I hope that I don't look like a walking Marine Corps stereotype. I'm like 5'3" and, you know, relative.
I won't ask if you have a USMC tattoo.
Oh, you can ask. I don't.
Okay.
My mom would have killed me. I was athletic. I was a really just strong athlete growing up, and I never thought about the military at all until, I got into some trouble before I went off to college at the University of Michigan, and my parents really laid down the law. They didn't feel comfortable sending me off to school if I was just going to go, you know, sneak out and go to parties. And my dad had been in the Marine Corps, and he said to me, he's like, listen, there's this program called the Naval Reserve Officer Training Corps. I really think you need to give it a semester. You don't have to go into the military, but if you just give it a shot and at least get to be surrounded by these, you know, really focused students, I think it could do some good for you. And my ultimatum was, you know, do this, go to University of Michigan, go to ROTC, or stay at home and go to community college. We've got a great community college, but I was adventure bound. And so I was intrigued by the Marines. I mean, it was a really tight-knit group. You know, as part of the Naval Reserve Officer Training Corps, there's just something that stuck out about the Marine Corps that perhaps it was the confidence that they had that I didn't have at that time, or perhaps, you know, it was the camaraderie, that tight-knit group. But I just really wanted to be a part of that.
And the experience ended up being very positive.
Absolutely. It's not a perfect organization. There's 180,000 Marines. Only 1,000 are female officers, so that's a pretty powerful statistic. You know, they don't post on their recruiting posters, but it was a really intense experience. There were many days that weren't necessarily easy, but I grew from them. And, you know, I met my husband, who retired from the Marine Corps, so I've been a part of the Marine Corps family for quite some time. And it's been, again, not a perfect organization, but a pretty great one to be a part of.
So, Angie, I'm curious. You and I have a couple parallels early in our academic career. I actually paid for college by being in the Army ROTC. I had a full scholarship there.
Oh, wonderful.
It was wonderful. And, you know, bizarrely, when it came time for me to graduate, you know, I owed the government several years of my life. Ronald Reagan was president, and he thought we had too many officers. So he told folks that wanted to go the private route, if we wanted to, we could leave after getting a full ride to college with no obligation to the military. But that background, you know, is kind of playing soldier in ROTC. I mean, when you're there and you're doing things, it's pretty intense, but it's very different than being a full-time soldier or leading people into harm's way. I'm curious. Courtney tells a story about your co-author about going from ROTC into the military itself and some of her transitional experiences. What was yours as far as the transition? How well did ROTC prepare you for being a officer in the Marines?
I think having the benefit of going through ROTC, I think it prepared me, you know, very well. I think being indoctrinated into that culture for 4 years in college, and you only get a small taste of it, but it's just enough to mentally prepare you. You know, I think where I perhaps struggled was just the lack of socialization of, you know, being a Marine or even being in the woods or playing with guns as a kid, you know, being a female. I played with Barbies. I feel like that was some of the struggles that I had, making that leap to become an officer. But I think like anything in life, you know, you meet these, you know, opportunities head on and throw your hard work ethic into it. So I feel like ROTC was a really great preparatory experience to get me ready to serve as the Marines.
Yeah. You know, as long as we're on it, I'll share some because there might be people in the audience that are thinking about doing ROTC or going to one of the academies. I have a good friend that went to West Point, and he shared his life experiences with me. Personally, I found it really difficult, the balance between academia and being a soldier. In my program, pretty much the Army owned me on Mondays. And a little bit on the weekends as well. But it was really difficult. They're very different life experiences. And to try to excel at both was really challenging. What's your thoughts for people that are thinking about doing
it? ROTC. Oh, you know, I would agree to you. I think it was a tremendous, I like to think about the whole going to college being an ROTC experience. I mean, it was a life lesson in prioritization and how to make good choices or how to suffer through really bad choices. But the reality was that I just didn't have time. I didn't have time, I feel like, to excel as a student if that was my only pursuit. And I think that there were things that I would have liked to focus more on in ROTC before having served as an officer. Yet when I think about that entire experience, I think about the resiliency it built within me. So I really think that was the payoff for it. And it was, again, I used to envy so much of the students who only had really school to focus on. I had a part-time job, too, that I needed to cover expenses. So it was a really difficult transition, and I may have missed out on things, but I think that, again, the resiliency that you acquire is the true gain in that.
Yeah, you know, I think it's hard for people thinking about doing it because each of those, being a full-time student, is attractive and has nice things.
Mm-hmm.
And being a soldier has its benefits as well and has attractive pieces, but it's kind of hard to balance both of those. So thanks for sharing that. We need to wrap up, but we have time for one last question.
Yeah.
And I think having confidence as a leader is really important, and you have a chapter on that in your book, talking about building your confidence. What are some things people should know about that?
First and foremost, I don't think that confidence gets enough airtime. And when you really stop and think about it and learn about it, you start to realize that your confidence level attributes to the goals you seek, how you handle failure, or even just what you do when you're in the process of trying to achieve a goal and how you tackle it on. I mean, it is connected to the outcome. So knowing that confidence isn't a skill, it's an emotion, I think is really helpful. And more importantly, you can build it. So it'll be there for you when you need it the most. And so I think that's one of the, I think, again, learning that confidence is an emotion is one of the most helpful things I share with professionals.
Okay, well, that's a great note for us to wrap up on. Our guest this morning has been Angie Morgan. She's the co-author of the book, Spark, How to Lead Yourself and Others to Greater Success.
Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Yes. Next up, we're going to have Rick Ridgway from Patagonia, the company, not the region of South America. But Rick Ridgway will be joining us shortly. I did want to remind everyone that our pledge drive, Doug, begins next week, next Monday, our Better Together pledge drive, and we hope you will be there to support community radio. You, our listeners, are one quarter of our operating budget, and we're counting on you to keep us going for the next 6 months with our Better Together pledge drive starting.
And it's worth letting people know, boy, Monday morning there are some great giveaways. You definitely want to be listening early and call in early.
We start with All Resort Group, as we always traditionally start, and they have lots of discounted rides for a pledge. So we are famous for the value of the premiums that we give back.
The pledge drive historically has been 5 days. During our last pledge drive, we moved it to four. Are we doing 4 days again this week?
We're gonna do four. That's our pledge to listeners. If you can come up with what we need, which is $125,000 per drive, if we can reach that, we will cut it off at 4 days. We're not currently scheduling anything on Friday except to pump our online auction. So we do reserve the right, however.
it's the carrot and the stick.
Yeah, if we need to, we would continue on, but we know the good folks of the Wasatch Back will support us. So when we come back, Rick Ridgway from Patagonia.
This is Ryan Hoffman, manager at Mountain West Bank, sponsor of KPCW. We're a community bank with a great understanding of our local needs. Mountain West Bank has something unheard of nowadays, but I can't say it on the radio. We're next to the movies near Kearns Boulevard at 649-3369, Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Cookies on Fridays!
This is Chris Robinson with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties. KPCW is one of the many nonprofits our agents and company support. They are the backbone of Summit and Wasatch counties in our incredible community. More info at bhhsutah.com.
This is Eric Lee, attorney in the Park City office of Jones Waldo. As a Park City resident for 20 years, I'm proud to support KPCW. Jones Waldo provides legal services to residents of Summit County in many areas. 435-200-0085. JonesWaldo.com.
This is Allison Kulo with the Park City Chamber Bureau. Joining the Chamber Bureau provides your business with benefits, from lodging projections, educational videos, group sales leads, and a listing on the top travel site for Park City, and much more. Becoming a member of the Park City Chamber Bureau is a great investment for your business. Information on joining can be found at visitparkcity.com or call us at 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit organization and KPCW supporter.
And welcome back to Mountain Money. Still trying to get a hold of Rick Ridgway. Hopefully he's not dangling on top of a mountain, Doug. So in the meantime, let's talk about some of the other things we were going to talk about, like the jobs report came out when, Friday?
It's always the first Friday of the month. Last Friday was first Friday. People were hoping for 175,000 new jobs nationwide. And the number came out really strong, actually, Larry, just under 230,000 new jobs.
Very good. Is today when the market would?
No.
Well, who knows what the market moves by?
It was Friday, and Friday was a, you know, we talked last Monday about the Dow hitting 20,000, mm-hmm. and as we were in here a week ago, the market was negative. It was negative most of the week, but when this jobs report came out, the market went up above 20,000 again. Unemployment rate's down to 4.8%. A lot of economists would say, you know, that's pretty close to full employment. Utah's employment rate is closer to 3.2%. I don't have the exact number, but we're one of the best in the nation.
I mean, if you're looking for a job, there are jobs out there.
Yeah.
At every skill level, I would imagine.
Yeah. In fact, companies are hurting. It's becoming a challenge for them. And, you know, surprisingly, what we're not seeing nationwide is an uptick in the hourly wages. And I think that's something that everybody is waiting for. We've heard about this income inequality and how the people at the top end of the scale are doing well, but we haven't seen that trickle down. I'm hoping with the unemployment as low as it is and the demand for workers as high as it is, we start to see an uptick in hourly wages.
Yeah, okay, so now it's been 2 weeks plus maybe since Donald Trump was sworn in, and he's sent all sorts of jitters throughout the world. But have any of those jitters shown on Wall Street? It seems like it's been on a tear since he was elected.
Yeah, there definitely was a pause, though, in the last couple of weeks as these executive orders came out. I don't know if it's a record. I suspect it is. 20 executive orders in 10 days. That's a lot of changes to the rule of law over a very short period of time. And the investment world likes certainty. And a lot of these things, people have to digest and figure out what exactly do these things mean.
And in addition to the executive orders, just the new heads of agencies are changing things with their own administrative orders within their groupings. One of those that I pay attention to is the FCC, since we have a license from them to broadcast. And the first day the new chairman came in, he started reducing the commitment of. We now get word that Rick Ridgway has canceled. So, never mind. So. With that, let's continue with Mountain Money after this.
Mountain Money on KPCW is sponsored in part by Columbus Pacific Properties, presenting Viridian, 21 new residences along the 11th fairway of the Canyons Golf Course with year-round amenities and gondola access. Summers on the fairway, winters on the slopes. More information at ViridianParkCity.com.
Hi, I'm Matt from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of contemporary and mountain modern home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake and offer complete design services. We are on the web at sanfrandesign.com. San Francisco Design, love your home.
Yeah, the point I was going to get back to was that Just at the FCC alone, they've already cut out some paperwork requirements on day one of the new Republican becoming the chair.
Which is a good thing from your point of view, I'm sure.
Well, it is. They weren't onerous requirements. They were more symbolic, I think, than anything. But in addition, net neutrality on the web, which was put in place by the democratically controlled FCC to spread out the fairness of access to the internet,
fairness is a word encumbered with judgment. So what's fair to one person is not fair to another.
Yeah, the idea was that just because you're a little guy, companies couldn't sell you an inferior service and give the high speeds to the bigger companies paying higher rates. So it was a consumer protection thing. That appears to be out the window as well.
Yeah, which is probably very unfortunate. You know, we're starting to see it with cell plans, and as consumers, we like it where we can stream data from certain services for free. But imagine, Larry, if one music streaming service you could stream for free and the other ones you had to pay for data. Well, that would give that company a huge advantage, and it would benefit the incumbents and the people with the strong balance sheets.
Right, right. So let's go back to some of the points Angie Morgan was talking about. You're a student of some of these companies. FedEx, she mentioned, and Fred Smith of FedEx wrote the foreword for this Sparks book. And I didn't know the founder of that company, Fred Smith, was a Marine, as you didn't either. But I remember in the early days of FedEx where he couldn't meet payroll one week. And he flew to Las Vegas and put the company's remaining assets on the table.
I've heard that story, too. I hope it's true because we're talking about it on the air. I'm not 100%. What is it, Snopes? Snoops?
Let's check that.
Disclaimer, let's keep talking.
I've heard that story for years, and I guess you assume they're true if you've heard it enough.
It sounds so outrageous. I do have my doubts.
But, yeah, allegedly he took the remaining assets of the company to Las Vegas and had to gamble and win enough to make payroll.
Fortunately, Lady Luck was on his side. You know, when I read that Fred Smith did two tours of duty in Vietnam, it did not surprise me because what Fred Smith created, I mean, nobody who back 30 years ago was saying, I've got a package and it needs to be somewhere by 10 a.m. I mean, there were some people. But imagine how many times you and I have used FedEx. Certainly a lot less now than in the past. Most of that has moved, I think, from business needs, right? Because we can just email or DocuSign things. But really what's taken off is the e-commerce and all the stuff we're buying online and shipping things. UPS just had out their quarterly earnings recently, and their business is booming, but it's not as profitable as it was in the past because the business customers were much more profitable for UPS and FedEx than you and I getting our shipping of plastic parts that we don't need, but getting delivered to us in a day or 2 days.
Yeah, and now the prospect is the drones will fly through the air and deliver your package, so it has become an interesting thing. And I would have thought that with the rise of e-commerce that these delivery services would all be booming in the stock market, not necessarily.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with that shift from more profitable businesses into less profitable consumers, so that is a challenge. You know, Larry, we should probably share with people that, unfortunately, our guest Rick Ridgway of Patagonia, they had to postpone the interview, which is why listeners are hearing you and I chit-chat a little bit here. You know, Larry, you shared with the public about your retirement coming up here sometime soon. And I've shared with you that I'd love to kind of interview you about your experiences here at KPCW, and maybe today's a good day to do that.
Well, we do have 20 minutes here, don't we?
We do have 20 minutes. So you've been with us, what, 7 or 8 years now?
I came here in April of 2010. At that point in time, the station, while we were coming out of the recession. And our mission is to be on the air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, every day of the year. So it's hard to cut back when that's your mission. So we weathered that and are on a fairly stable financial footing right now. But as I say, the pledge drive is still key to our success. And not only is it the money we need to keep operating, but it's also just a good way to engage our listeners. It's sometimes you talk and you wonder if anybody's out there. When we say, please phone in, we get 800 to 1,000 phone calls. And that is huge, and it shows how important KPCW is to this community. There really isn't another local broadcast source. Certainly there's Park City Television, but they don't maintain a news department. They have some talk shows, which are valuable for organizations to get their word out. But we've been able to build this news team to 5 people, and that means we have the manpower to go to all the important meetings so you don't have to. And we'll have a summary of them the next morning. So,
you know, I grew up in a small town outside of Cleveland, Ohio, and like Park City, you know, the subjects that my neighbors were interested in was what's happening in the schools, you know, what's happening here locally. There's lots of resources for news, for statewide news, for nationwide news, much less so locally. And there was no small radio station in our town, so it was really hard to find out what was going on, and when there was something that maybe you wanted to put input in, it was hard to find out how to connect, and I think KPCW does a really nice job of making that easy for all of us.
You know, and just on a basic level, if you think back or were here before August of 1980, the Park Record came out once a week. There'd be an election on a Tuesday, and you'd have to wait till Saturday to find out who won, unless you personally wanted to go to the courthouse and see the results, because there was no internet and there was no local broadcast station, television, or radio. So, you know, you voted on Tuesday night and you woke up Wednesday, and it was going to be 3 more days before you'd find out how the votes turned.
So this is the KPCW of today. You mentioned we have 5 full-time reporters out getting the local news.
They're not all full-time.
We have five reporters.
People that we can call on.
I want you to take us back, though, to 2010, was it, that you said you started?
Yeah.
What was the station like then?
Well, we were brand new in this new studio, so that was... That was fun, but there were also some punch list items, that things that didn't work right that we had to get fixed. And so the physical plant looks pretty much the same, but it runs much better now. Other things from that era were, well, we were just spending out of our checking account. We had really no reserves left. We were just hoping that enough would come in in the week, or in the 2-week period, that we could make payroll the next time. We had small reserves that I never had to dip into. So it wasn't like we were living paycheck to paycheck. We did have some small amount of reserves.
But the station was losing money as a
we were
as,
losing 16,
as an entity.
We were losing $16,000 a month. And I calculated the burn rate and looked at it and said, you know, we're not going to have any money left in another 16, 18 months. So the challenge then was in a down market in a resort town, the restaurants weren't underwriting, the real estate companies weren't underwriting because nobody was going out for fancy dinners. And some restaurants went out of business in that era, and real estate companies consolidated, but they were not underwriting because nobody was buying anything. So what got us through was creating more reasons to underwrite with KPCW. That's when we started Mountain Money. And this Green Earth was a carryover show. But We started this strip of five public affairs shows.
What did the station used to do at nine? From nine to ten,
we went to music. And by creating something that people valued, which was local information in a pleasant talk format, no screaming at our talk shows. And although I'd like to scream at Rick Ridgway right now, but.
Yeah, that's not polite no. With a live show. That's hard.
No, but yeah.
So how about your personal experience? So you came here in 2010. You know, you and I have been out in Park City or Salt Lake City socially. It's not unusual for somebody to stop you and I because they recognize your voice. And we'd like to think that KPCW's reach is far and wide. The reality is it's here in Summit County. It's the Wasatch Back. Tell our listeners, why do people in Salt Lake City recognize your voice almost instantly?
I presume it's 30 years on television that would do that. My first career was television news, and I think next Wednesday marks the 40th anniversary of us driving through Silver Creek Canyon and looking out on the Wasatch Range, 40 years. And 40 years ago, we kind of said to each other, my wife and I, that...
You and Carol.
Carol and I, that... I'm trying to think of what's grammatically correct. We thought we'd stay here 2 years. And then move on. And
I can't tell you how many people in Park City, including myself, have said we were moving here for 2 years.
That's everybody's story. And the other story everybody says is they came for the winters and stayed for the summers. So that likewise is true. And yeah, I figured after 2 years, if we moved away, we'd just spend all our vacation time and money coming back here. So why not live a ski vacation instead of living a city life and commuting to the ski
And here
vacation.
We are 40 years later.
Time flies.
So 30 years in television, did you have much management experience during that period of time, or was it pretty much, was the focus mainly on being an on-air personality?
No, I spent several years as executive producer and assistant news director, and I ran the radio news operation for a affiliated radio station down there. Didn't put a lot of time into that, but was involved with that at some level. But, you know, this is the, it's in broadcasting, you sometimes can't understand why you're being sent where you're and what the story is that somebody else thinks is great. And coming here, it was a chance to run things the way I thought they should be run. And not curse the boss, because I was the boss.
Let other people curse you.
There's plenty of that. Yeah.
So like, 40 years is a long time, and the world's incredibly different now than it was when you started in journalism. It seems like journalism is a really tough space for people to make a living. We've had guest on from the Salt Lake Tribune. Clearly, the print media has really gone through some tough times. What do you think for a young person? It's a question you and I ask our guests on Mound Money with some frequency. You know, what do you think for young people about if they're interested in journalism?
Well, it would break my heart to say this, but. Certainly, in its present form, there isn't a whole lot of bright future in it. But what the internet has done is just made everyone a reporter if they want to be. And while there aren't newspaper jobs around and they're continuing to fold, and the Tribune, as much as I love the Tribune, its Sunday edition, if you take out all the ads, is, you know, only as thick as the Thursday edition used to be. Thursday was the next biggest newspaper, and we're down to the Thursday size, and one of these days we'll probably wind up at the Monday size, which is a very thin paper. So I would have a hard time recommending traditional news media but it's to the point now that you can be your own publisher. You can set up a WordPress site, and there's one in town here that does some very good journalism, parkrag.com. And he's just out there by himself being a citizen journalist and accepting information from others, and other people write for it too. So all that is can be done now that never could. Now the question is, how do you monetize that? So that is the other issue. But some people are. I have friends who are writing. They get enough people looking at their websites, and then advertisers come and say, can I stick a banner on your page?
So one of the things that just started to play out recently and really came to a head during the election cycle was this phenomenon about fake news. What's your thoughts on fake news?
Well, you know, it's buyer beware. That's the thing about all these websites. They aren't running, most of them, by professional journalist standards. A lot of them do run with rumor that's not substantiated. So you have to pick and choose your sources. CNN, I've never seen any reason why that should be called fake news. It's not.
I don't think, I don't associate when, you know, the fake news really that I'm talking about is really the Facebook feeds where they have these outrageous headlines that some people take as gospel. And unfortunately, some of the fake headlines are hard to decipher. Larry, you and I, I don't know, a couple years ago, you brought in an ad that was in one of the local major newspapers down in Salt Lake City.
Oh, Coins?
Right, with the collector coins, and it does say in fine print at the top that it's an advertisement, but I do see some parallels. And at the time, you and I were critical of the newspaper for putting that in because a lot of people don't know enough to be cautious of that, and people, they're kind of scammish, and people get caught up in that. What responsibility do you think organizations like Facebook have to make sure that the headlines on their site are truthful?
Well, it's a free country, and there is a First Amendment that protects free speech. So, you know, you can post whatever you want for the headline, but if you are deceitful, I would, and if it's clearly looks shady, if I were Facebook, I'd have some standards. Newspapers have standards. We have standards. Everybody needs some degree of ethical standards by which they stand for objectivity in journalism. And Facebook shouldn't. They don't want to censor. But if something is out there that's clearly a scam, it seems to me it's their site. They ought to police it.
You know, that's one of the observations I made. The audience probably knows, you know, I join you Monday mornings for an hour. This isn't my full-time job. I'm not a professional journalist. I work down in Salt Lake City for Albion Financial Group. But one of my observations coming in here and being indoctrinated into the culture of journalism was just how closely held that standard of ethical journalism is here. I've got a show I do now in Salt Lake City as well. Same thing down there. More so than almost any organization that I'm involved with. My firm has very high standards, but it's different. I mean, this is you wear these journalistic ethical standards on the outside on your sleeves. Why is that?
Well, you have to stand for something. And if you stand for alternative facts, which aren't facts, you know, you're going to lose an audience over time. You're going to offend pretty much everybody at some point. So it's really, you know, we're also FCC licensed. We can't be, even if we wanted to, and we don't, we couldn't be stridently inaccurate, stridently on
the
attack all the time.
If the public had a chance to be inside the four walls of the KPCW studios, they would be proud of the decisions your team makes. There's decisions that are made as, you know, when do we air this and how do we air it and how do we be respectful to all parties? I've been very impressed with that. And there are things we don't talk about on air, the specifics of, you know, the specific cases that I'm talking about. But I do want to share just that high ethical standard that you and your team have.
Well, you know, there's in every news organization, there is or needs to be a firewall, and it's called the firewall. And that's the division between sales and news content. And you cannot ever tolerate having the sales department dictate, lay off that car dealer.
I'm talking about more sensitive topics. And
yeah, well, we try to be family friendly all the time, and we vet our music library so it's not explicit lyrics. We have the play only the broadcast versions, and there are some stories that, when you judge the story, you think, how many people does this affect? Maybe two. Maybe that doesn't rise to the level of a news story, even if there's something, you know, lurid about the news story. If it's not really affecting that many people, I don't think we should be covering it.
So we've done a good job of covering the 20 minutes that we were left with. I do want to ask one thing that's going on right now today in the news that, frankly, to me is shocking. I want to get your thoughts on it, which is the Trump administration's kind of fight with the press in the way that they treat the press as adversaries as opposed to an important part of a free republic.
Well, for starters, go to YouTube and look up what's her name, McCarthy, Melissa McCarthy, playing Sean Spicer, the press secretary, on Saturday Night Live.
I hate to say, just go see Spicer do it live himself. It's scary to see the things he's saying.
You know, I don't think that can go on. How long can you just make bald-faced lies and say, no, it's the media that gets it wrong, not us? It's just day after day there seem to be untruths, exaggerations. I mean, my God, the president goes to the National Prayer Service and says, pray for Arnold Schwarzenegger because his ratings are down the tubes and mine were great. This is at the National Prayer Service. I mean, just totally inappropriate. Hey, I do want to get one traffic mention. In eastbound and westbound I-80 through Parley's, we'll have some temporary closures from milepost 132 at Mount Air Canyon to milepost 138 east of Lambs. They are relocating wildlife. They've been forced down low. They're by the road. So from 10 to noon today, they're going to be doing that. And so be careful. There are going to be significant delays and extended clearance times possible.
And we thank them for doing that work. That's important. These are big animals that deserve our care. We also want to thank our guest this morning, Angie Morgan. She's the co-author of Spark, How to Lead Yourself and Others to Great Success.
Yes, and I also want to thank our great sponsors, Mountain West Bank, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Design, Jones Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough, All Resort Group, Park City Mountain and Apex Residences, and Viridian Park City, Columbus Pacific Properties. This is KPCW, where we've got your Wasatch back.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air, Cruise, and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com. Park City Bike Demos, Kearns Boulevard next to Adolph's, parkcitybikedemos.com. Long, Reimer, Weiniger, Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law,